evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, June 5th, 2019. The leader of the rebel SPLM North has been arrested in Khartoum.
Some groups of the militias of the TMC, the Janjaweed, and members of the National Intelligence Security has captured and arrested Mr. Yasser Arman.
And a game of hide-and-seek continues between Sudanese military forces and protesters in the capital, Khartoum.
Security forces come on the road and remove the roadblock, but as soon as they leave that area, the young people come again and set more even blocks on the road.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The junta in Sudan has arrested Yasser Arman, the leader of the rebel Sudan People's Liberation Movement North. A member of the Sudanese Professional Association, Mohamed Naji Al-Assam, tells this program that paramilitary forces picked Arman from the offices of the SPLM North. Al-Assam says the military junta is not interested in peaceful negotiations.
Yeah, it is confirmed that some groups of the militias of the TMC, the Janjaweed, and members of the National Intelligence Security has captured and arrested Mr. Yasser Arman from the temporary headquarters of the SPLM North. And stories about them beating up other members who were there in the headquarters. He was taken to undetermined place until now.
The Sudanese Professional Association have been acting from behind the scenes. Where are you in the city in Khartoum? Why can't we see you on the streets?
Yeah, we are not hiding, actually. We are with our people. We remain in around Khartoum, visiting the different places of protest in the neighborhoods and in the blockades that were made by protesters in the neighborhoods of Khartoum to prevent the militias of the TMC from killing the Sudanese protesters. The TMC has done a massacre in the last few days by dispersing the city by force. Live ammunition were fired. We are still counting the death toll. Last estimates from the CSCSD, the Central Committee of Sudan Doctors, estimates the tolls around 100 until now. A lot of bodies were found in the River Nile, killed by gunshots. Until now, live ammunition can be heard in the different neighborhoods of Khartoum State and in different states of Sudan. The sittings were dispersed by the forces belonging to the TMC and to the RSF, the Rebel Support Forces, the Janjaweed.
Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah al-Burhani offered an olive branch in his speech today, and he called for dialogue and resumptions of negotiations. What is your take on that?
Okay, I said that Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Hemeti and the other members of the TMC are now the enemies of the Sudanese people. They have betrayed the Sudanese people who were having their sitting just next to the army headquarters, and they thought that the army would protect them from the militias of the previous regime. But the
Sudanese analysts are saying that the Transitional Military Council offered you a nice deal, but you were asking for more. That is, you want a government that is made 100% of civilians.
The deal was very near. We were expecting to have. It is very clear now that the TMC would never sign that agreement, because it is obvious now that they all of this negotiation was at play. From day one, they wanted to protect the old regime and the figures of the old regime, and it was a play made by the NCP, because actually the TMC is the security committee of Omar al-Bashir, who were protecting Omar al-Bashir. And when the people reached the army headquarters, they said somehow that they are going to protect the people and that they removed Omar al-Bashir.
Your group is now calling for a civil nationwide disobedience in Sudan. When is that going to start, and what do you intend to achieve?
The actual civil disobedience and the actual strike will start next week on Sunday. We are using every tool possible to organize and mediate this open nationwide strike with the aim of toppling the TMC. A huge issue right now is that the TMC has blocked the and shut down the internet service in Khartoum. They are putting Khartoum and Sudan under siege to cover up their atrocities, the atrocities that they are making. We have documented stories of rape and burning to protesters inside the camps that were built in the city. Live ammunition was used to kill directly. We have gunshots to the head and to the chest to our people. So they are using every tool possible to cover up their crimes by blocking the internet service. But Sudanese people will continue to organize and to be peaceful, to maintain their peacefulness until we again topple another dictatorship in Sudan.
That's Mohamed Naji Al-Sam, a member of the Sudanese Professional Association, a group spearheading the protest in Sudan that led to the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. He spoke with me via Skype from Khartoum this past hour. South Sudanese living in Khartoum are concerned about their safety as militia groups arrest and beat protesters in the capital following Monday's crackdown. The twin cities of Omdurman and Khartoum remain locked down with proxy paramilitary groups patrolling the streets and suburbs. Our reporter Mongu Ugali is in Khartoum and has been monitoring developments in the capital.
Sounds of gunfire is still being heard as the protesters continue to set more roadblocks on the major road. Security forces come on the road and remove the roadblock, but as soon as they leave that area, the young people come again and set more even blocks on the road. So as we speak, markets and major installations and institutions remain closed as they are also celebrating the Eid al-Fitr today.
There's a big number of South Sudanese in the suburbs around Khartoum. Have you talked to some families there, and how are they doing?
South Sudanese here are expressing worry and fear about the situation in Sudan for the last 3 days. And some of them are saying if the situation continues the same, their life would be in danger. That is the phrase they use. Because they are here as refugees, they are here as foreigners in Sudan. They feel they are not protected, and as also they try to avoid by all means, you know, engagement and involved in the protest of the Sudan. So they regard it as an internal issue. They cannot get involved into it. Sudan hosts more than a million South Sudanese refugees, and majority of them are refugees in the camps in areas such as Eastern Darfur and the White Nile State. So these are the biggest two locations where South Sudanese majority are there as refugees. But still, there are still significant number of them who are within the host communities in Khartoum and other states.
There is no difference between the people from the Blue Nile, the Nuba Mountains, and the people from South Sudan, even people from Darfur. They all look, people look alike. I mean, are there instances of people who have been caught in crossfire or being mistaken for protesters, people from South Sudan?
I have not come across that, but the latest information coming from the Sudanese Medical Doctors Committee today is that the death toll has increased to 60. But it remains unclear whether these 60, are there some South Sudanese involved in them. It is something yet to be identified within the coming days. But so far, I have not come across any particular incident involving South Sudanese within the past 3 days.
The city remains a ghost town. There's a lockdown in the Khartoum Omdurman and Khartoum North. Are shops opened? Are people able to go and buy bread and sugar? I mean, I remember this protest started because of lack of bread in the town. Are people able to buy basic commodities?
Like, the main markets are closed. Only a few groceries, which are within the neighborhood, within the residential areas, they are open for, you know, communities or for public to come and, you know, buy a few items for the local consumption. But yet, the doors are not, like, fully open. It is open halfway. You know, in one shop, you can see people staging there, people gathering, people try to access, you know, buy food commodities for their families, as some main of the markets and other places are closed.
You told me yesterday that Sudan will celebrate the Eid today. How about the mood of the Eid celebrations?
The mood is not like the previous years. This morning, few were able to go and access mosques and go and participate and attend the Eid prayer. But some of them also remain indoors as they fear of security forces, and especially the young people. The young people could not access the mosque, because around the mosque there were some more security personnel deployed, you know, as a precaution for further any process that might take place after the Eid prayer.
That's reporter Mungu Ugali in Khartoum speaking to me this past hour. The United Nations Human Rights Agency called on Sudanese military leaders to investigate the violence that has killed at least 60 protesters, according to doctors aligned with the protesters. VOA's Zlatka Hawk has more.
Protests in Sudan's capital Khartoum turned deadly on Monday as security forces clashed with protesters who burned tires and created barricades. The United Nations Human Rights Agency called on the military to investigate the violence and hand over power to a civilian administration.
We understand from reliable sources that between 30 and 35 people may have been killed and hundreds others injured. We also received reports that the armed forces, security forces, had entered a hospital where injured protesters were being treated. And this, of course, is entirely unacceptable.
The head of the Sudanese Transitional Military Council, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, promised that the incidents will be thoroughly investigated. But he also announced that the council has decided to cancel all the agreements it has made with protest leaders.
The military council decided the following: to cancel all the agreements and to stop negotiations with the Declaration of Freedom and Change Forces, call for general elections within 9 months, under regional and international observation, and form a caretaker government to implement the transitional mandate.
That mandate includes accountability for corruption in the ousted government and the return of displaced people to their homes. The military council and protesters had previously agreed on a longer transition period to allow time for the dismantling of Bashir's entrenched political network. Khalid Omar Youssef, leader of the umbrella group Declaration of Freedom and Change Forces, said the head of the military council is not different from Bashir.
Al-Burhan has not learned the lessons of history, it seems. He's reproducing a complete and clear image of history. We believe the matter is now in the hands of the Sudanese people.
Youssef said the attack on the protesters has united the Sudanese people in their determination to remove the military regime. Zlatica Hawk, VOA News, Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese authorities deny reports by Human Rights that soldiers killed and abused civilians in Yei River State. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you love about Africa?
It's about the nature and the green about it, and then the hospitality it has.
Africa's got tremendous mountains, rivers, lakes, animals. The beauty of Africa itself, inviting Europeans, Australians, Asians to come and visit Africa.
I love the hair. I love the thinking. I love the brain. I love the people. I love the lands of Africa. And I love the history of Africa.
It's nature, it's beauty, weather. All is good. And the way that it favors a human being and even the growing of crops, that's food.
When I look at Africa, I most like the natural beauty of Africa. All the seas, rivers. So I'm proud to be in Africa.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A new Human Rights Watch report detailing violence in Yei River State is blaming government soldiers for committing crimes against civilians. Ayen Dengbior has details from Washington.
Arbitrary arrest, beatings, torture, and looting of civilian property were all tactics employed by South Sudanese government soldiers during an offensive in Yei River State that took place between December and March 2019, according to the Human Rights Watch report. HRW South Sudan researcher Nyagwa Tutpur says there's no question civilians were targeted.
In some cases, civilians were forced to be porters, that is to carry the property that the soldiers had looted. In some cases, civilians were beaten. In others, some were arrested, detained in a makeshift barracks such as schools and health centers, and then brought to Yei in some cases. So these are among the stories that civilians that had been displaced were telling us at the time.
The Human Rights Watch also documented cases of rape and sexual violence committed by government soldiers. The fighting in Yei River State triggered forced displacement of many civilians into the Democratic Republic of Congo and Uganda. The report says the government's goal was to get rid of National Salvation Front fighters loyal to Thomas Cirilo Swaka, who refused to sign the revitalized peace deal. The offensive began on the Yei-Maridi Road, but spread to other locations, including Mukaya and Otogo counties.
They did not witness clashes between NAS and the government. Rather, government forces either were shooting in the air to scare away civilians, and in some instances entered their homes, or entered into the villages, looted from the civilians. They took goats, they took cassavas, they took cooking utensils, they even took firewood and charcoal from civilians, and they looted clothes as well, and even money.
Human Rights Watch researchers spoke to 72 displaced civilians in Yei River State between March 14th and the 21st. Toot says they also spoke with government officials in the area to get an accurate sense of the events that happened in Yei River State since the end of last year.
And when we met with the governor in March, he denied the scale of the violence and of the hostilities and all the things that we've raised. And he said, oh, sometimes soldiers are just indisciplined. Soldiers should not violate human rights. They should not abuse civilians. They should not beat. They should not take from civilians. They should not set homes on fire. This is just not acceptable, and they should be held to account.
Government soldiers were responsible for most of the abuses in recent operations, according to the report. But rebel groups have also been linked to attacks on civilians and blocking access for aid workers. Toot says HRW stands by its research, despite efforts by officials to downplay the report's findings.
The evidence we have presented is very clear. It is not made up. It is based on on-the-ground research, and it was very thoroughly done, speaking with not only people who were displaced, but interlocutors from all over Yei, including government officials, including county commissioners, including the governor, including persons affiliated with the government itself. It is evidence-based research.
HRW is calling on the government of South Sudan to hold perpetrators accountable for crimes against civilians. It also calls on the African Union to establish the hybrid court, part of the signed peace agreement, to provide justice for victims of serious abuses committed since the onset of violence. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
The South Sudan government is lashing out against Human Rights Watch report released yesterday. Information Minister Michael Makuei says the report tries to tarnish the image of the South Sudanese army at a time when the permanent ceasefire is holding across the country. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
The HRW report accused government soldiers of committing extensive abuses against civilians during counterinsurgency operations in several villages of Ye River States, Mukaya, and Otogo counties. Government spokesman Michael McQuay calls the report false.
If you look at the report, the way it is written, and even the footage, the photo which has been put there, are not actually in place. These are all... These are SPLA soldiers. We don't deny them, but the way they have been portrayed here is it has no even connection with the alleged crimes which are said to have been committed.
McQuay accuses Human Rights Watch of making up stories about government forces.
All these are stories which are just concocted for the sake by those who want to make their living on the blood of the people of South Sudan. So this is not true. There is nothing as such. And we will follow it up. It is very clear now it is the American Human Rights Watch which reported that. And here the ambassador must answer and must give us a clear evidence that there is such a thing.
South Sudan's military spokesman, Major General Lul Roy Kwong, says the report is incomplete and not credible.
To the best of my knowledge, we have never gone on offensive or on counter-insurgence operations during the time they had indicated in their report. What I'm aware of is that during that time, that was the time Nurse of Tom Shrilo rejected signing the peace agreement and continued with their offensive operations against our positions in different parts of Ye River State.
Kwong accuses unnamed international organizations of harboring ill will against the South Sudan government by writing disturbing reports with unfounded accusations and releasing them at a time when everyone is focusing on ending the conflict.
These accusations are nothing new. It has been more or less habitual from time to time. They would compile and release reports. Our response has been that there are compelling evidence proving that there are some elements within the security force who have committed crime. Then the body with evidence should come forward and give us this information so that it could be used to prosecute alleged culprits.
The report states that eyewitnesses told Human Rights Watch rebels had already left the areas or tactically withdrew during the operations before government forces arrived, and that soldiers attacked civilians, detained some, shot in the air or at animals, then looted property and destroyed homes. Boss McQuay and Kwong say the government will investigate the alleged abuses and come up with an appropriate response. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Today is World Environment Day, and Ugandan officials say South Sudanese refugees living in Uganda are helping to conserve the environment by planting trees. Mungume Davis Ruakarinj has more on that report from Kampala.
A group of South Sudanese refugees and the Ugandan hosts water a nursery bed in the Nyumanzi refugee settlement camp in Uganda's northern district of Adjumani. South Sudanese refugee Idri Iga helps take care of the nursery bed. Iga says once the seeds are planted, after germinating, they must be exposed to sunlight so they can endure the hot temperatures of northern Uganda.
This is bed where we prick the young seedlings. These are the beds. Then the other one, that is hardening here. So from here, we take the seedlings outside there for hardening. Then, okay, here... after pricking, it stays something like 2 to 4 weeks. Then we take it there, outside for hardening. Hardening is taking the seedling outside for harsh condition. Okay, to be ready for transplanting. Because if they are under the sea...
The nursery bed holds more than 5,000 seedlings, including many fruit trees. 27-year-old South Sudanese refugee Simon Wani says he fled to Uganda from his home in Nimule in 2014, along with his wife and their three children. When he says by working the nursery, he earns money to complement the food rations he receives from humanitarian agencies.
This job is important for me. It helps my family. Yeah, when
I'm here. It bring money for buying some other items at home, like food, medicine. I pay even the school fees.
Godfrey Byaruhanga, an emergency and refugee coordinator in the office of Uganda's prime minister, says hundreds of thousands of trees have been cut down to help resettle refugees in the area.
And these trees, most of them are cut to settle people, but not only that, other trees are also cut to provide firewood. Other trees are cut to provide construction materials. Other trees are cut also to get charcoal.
Uganda is home to more than 1.3 million refugees. Most of the refugees come from South Sudan, DR Congo, Kenya, Sudan, Eritrea, and Ethiopia. Uganda's refugee policy has been held by the UN as one of the best in the world. It grants rural refugees a plot of land so they can establish backyard gardening. Byaruhanga says the Ugandan government encourages refugees to plant quick-yielding fruits such as oranges and pawpaws.
We advocated for fruit trees, and that's actually what is happening in most of our settlements in West Nile, which is very good for fruits. If you are in Adjumani, you'll see how mangoes are doing extremely very well. We know if you get mangoes, they can sell mangoes, they can eat mangoes.
Byaruhanga says the government and aid workers are working with refugees to use environmental-friendly fuel sources such as energy-saving stoves. And he says the government works with humanitarian organizations to ensure that refugees and their host communities. Are able to plant at least 5 million trees before Refugee Day celebrations at the end of this month. World Environmental Day, which began in 1974, is marked every year to encourage worldwide awareness and action to protect the environment. It is also a day for people to do something locally, nationally, or globally to take care of the earth. The theme for this year's World Environmental Day is addressing air pollution. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
That report by Mugume Davis Rwakarinji from Kampala brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Large Appel Large by Pamelo Monka. Been listening to Pamelo Monka with the classic Largo Appel Largo, which means money calls money. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
L'argent appelle l'argent.
Avec son ami riche, le riche ne prête son argent, sa villa et sa voiture, car celui qui est riche, comme un riche.